Welcome to A World on Fire, Season 2, and I am here to talk about a very interesting story from the Silver Age involving an Earth 1 and an Earth 2 character. So, of course, I have one of my good buddies here from the show to keep me going, motivate me, encourage me, and hopefully help me a lot with some facts that I do not understand. Martin Gray, how are you, Martin?
I'm fine, Billy, and you will be fine. You're a machine. You know so much.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, DC, I will admit one of my favorite parts about the book we are going to talk about tonight, which is The Flash 129 from 1962, Double Danger on Earth. I did really like how the editor, you know, was tying back a few things that happened in this book to, you know, a couple of previous issues. So I love that. I'm a continuity hawk. So I love that. When I saw that, I was like, ooh, I have to go back and read that now because it said some of this is, you know, relative to that. So I love that. How about you?
Oh, I'm with you completely. I mean, given there's so much sort of referencing back in here to all the stories and give you science factoids, it's not so much a comic as a comic come encyclopedia. I mean, Julie Schwartz, the editor, he really did like to, you know, make sure everyone was up to speed, gives you everything you need to know and everything that you really don't need to know as well. So I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really trying to, you know, until we, you know, we can all kind of get together to do, you know, a bigger recording, trying to knock out some of these really cool stories from the Silver Age where there was Earth 1, Earth 2 crossovers with, you know, just a single character or two. You know, I did one of these Flash stories already with Ross. Just the other night, I had a recording with Terry where we talked about a really good Green Lantern story. That was a lot of fun with, you know, those two, Earth 1 and Earth 2 Green Lanterns from that age. And then now we're going to jump back and talk about a Flash story here. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this one is I bought a trade. It's a nice little hardcover within the last year or two, I think. Flash of Two Worlds Deluxe Edition. And it's, you know, got some really good Flash stories here with Jay and Barry, of course, leading off with Flash of Two Worlds from issue number 123. So what do you think about Silver Age Flash here? Do you like the character?
Oh, huge, huge fan. It was one of the first comics I ever read as a kid, and I went straight into buying the Bronze Age version, quite confused by how Barry suddenly had long, cool hair. But, I mean, they were just really, really nice, well-worked stories. Usually, you know, obviously Gordon and Fox and John Broome writing, so you get your three chapters. Everything will be set up well. Again, loads of interesting information there. Colourful villains, callbacks to earlier stories. Excellent supporting characters in, well, just Iris and her father, really, pretty much. And I mean, you always got your value, you always got a full story in there, and sometimes you got a backup with Kid Flash, and they were just delightful.
Yeah, and another reason I love this is the villains. So I love Silver Age villains. I know some maybe more modern readers will, you know, take offense to that because they'll say that they're silly and crazy and kooky, but that's kind of the reason I like them. And we're going to have two really fun villains here that I enjoy quite a bit. And, you know, they are front and center on our cover here. And our cover is by Carmine Infantino and Murphy Anderson. So pretty good art team there on the cover. I like this cover quite a bit. What about you? What do you have to say about this cover?
It's just beautiful. I mean, straight away, the primary color is just pop completely with all the reds on me. You've got the red Barry Allen, the red Jay Garrick, the red of the logo. And it's just such a classic Carmine Infantino composition with Captain Cold at the back of the cover shooting at Barry Allen in the front. Trickster running through the air, and he's got Jay Garrick at the front on a fishing line. You've got the absolutely classic Central City flat silhouette from Carmine Infantino at the bottom. It's just, on the one hand, it's quite busy. On the other hand, it's perfect. Everything you could want on there.
Yeah, I enjoy this cover quite a bit. And I'll tell you, I know when I first started reading comics, a lot of the stuff I was seeing from Carmine Infantino was, you know, stuff he did later in life. So, you know, his skills were kind of diminishing. So I thought, oh, I don't really like this artist very much. But once I got to see his Flash in the Silver Age, especially, I fell in love with his work. And to me, I don't think he gets quite enough credit he's due here, because this cover, you said, it, you know, it's got the cityscape in the background, just like the silhouette of it. And I think he wanted everybody's attention to be on these two heroes and two villains. So what he did was he kind of has the, you know, air quotes camera angle, if you will, at a very far away low shot. So it's looking up to more in the sky to have like a beautiful, you know, powder baby blue sky background there. So your focus and your attention is solely on these four characters and not on the background of the city there, the silhouette, but it's still there. And it's a great touch because I think if he would have done like a shot at eye level and all the cityscape would have been in the background, it would have taken away from, you know, your focus being on these four characters. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And I love the fact that the cityscape goes through the ice and, you know, it's got a faded effect through the ice of Barry Allen's encased in. I don't see how I could have resisted that if I'd been a kid on the news, looking at the newsstands in 1962, because it's just so enticing. You know, I want to know what, you know, I can see what's going on, but what happens next and what happened previously.
Mm-hmm. And two of the villains here are two of my favorite villains. And one of those reasons is because of other media, television. You know, when I was a kid, I was a huge fan of the Super Friends television show. And he wasn't on a ton of episodes, but Captain Cold, you know, the Flash villain here, he was on some of the episodes and I liked him a lot. And I can't remember, I'm not real big on knowing who the voices were, you know, the voice actors were for those characters, but I liked whoever his voice actor was. It sounded like a tough criminal guy kind of voice that has, you know, this freeze gun. And I love his crazy outfit with his white boots and, you know, blue pants and blue shirt. And then he's got the white hood on top, but you can even see the little strings there that he has tied, right?
Oh, it's one of the coolest costumes in comics for any villain. I've never seen the Super Friends cartoons, but I can imagine the voice. I mean, come on, the guy's called Len Snart. You can imagine the voice that goes with Len Snart. It's funny because you've got Captain Cold in his cool blue and white boiler suit Parker type ensemble with his mole man mask, but then you've got the trickster in his, you know, yellow stripes, orange and black stripes, yellow and black stripes, blue and orange stripes, blue, black cape. If you had to wear the costume for a day of any of the characters on this cover, Billy, who would it be?
Well, I can tell you, if it was, you know, in the wintertime, I definitely want to wear Captain Cold's outfit because I hate the cold. But if it was a warmer day, I definitely want the trickster.
I can see you in either. Yeah, I think I'd go for Jay because of the helmet. And I always I love his big fat lightning bolt and his boots. His boots are the cutest.
Yeah, these two characters, obviously, they're, you know, analogs of each other. They're very much alike, but there is a huge contrast in the heroes, you know, their outfits here. You know, I love their costumes. And Barry, of course, the classic, you know, yellow boots and red all over with the, you know, the lightning bolts around his arms and around his waist and stuff like that. But like you said, Jay, I like how he has the blue pants and the blue helmet there just to have a little bit more of a contrast. I do like that quite a bit.
I do. And I like in the modern day how occasionally they make it look as if the trousers, the pants or jeans, blue jeans, which, you know, makes him seem like a scrappier character.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally agree with you there. So, all right, well, let's dive into the inside of this comic book here. So like I said, it's you know, Flash number 129, and I always thought to myself, why is it, you know, start at like 105? But I believe it was one of these deals kind of like Marvel did too, where one title transitioned into another one. So I think did Showcase then transition into Flash, I guess?
No, it continued the numbering of the original Jay Garrick series.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which went to, I think, 103 was 104, the first Barry Allen. I may be one issue out.
105, yeah.
Yeah, but no, Showcase continued on giving us an immense amount of new characters and concepts.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. I love it. So, yeah, it's and this is a story by Gardner Fox, which, again, Gardner Fox in the Silver Age, he was basically Mr. DC. He wrote so many things and a lot of fun stories too. And then there's pencils by Carmine Infantino and inks by Joe Giella, right?
Indeed. And I just really do adore the cleanliness of the pencil. As you say, in later years when Carmine Infantino, he was often inking himself, or he'd have someone like, you know, Dennis Jensen was a good inker, but he'd have inkers who weren't quite as good on him, and it would look sort of a bit clunkier and blockier. I think, obviously, you know, Carmine probably liked that himself, because that was the effect he gave himself. But and in the early, the Golden Age, when he was drawing, it was, you know, a bit, again, to use that word again, a bit scrappier looking, but still had a lot of life to it. But for me, this is just peak Carmine Infantino, and he's inked by the likes of Giorgiello or Frank Giacarlo. I can't say that. But I mean, as you go on, you just see how he just draws the characters in their civilian clothes, or how they draw them together. It's absolutely smashing, really beautiful stuff.
Yeah, and this first splash page here, which is excellent, starts out, it kind of shows you, you know, one of these deals where, you know, a lot of Silver Age and even into the Bronze Age, I feel like DC and Marvel still did this too, where sometimes the splash page would show you something that's going to happen later on in the book to kind of get you, you know, a little pumped up for it. And I like the splash page quite a bit. It's got the Flash logo at the top with the speed lines there. And then there's, you know, three text boxes kind of just giving you a quick little, you know, summary of what's going to happen here. And then the last one says double danger on Earth, and it shows two Earths there. I like that quite a bit. What do you think of this splash page?
Oh, I love it. And I mean, I enjoy in likes of the Flash and the Justice League of America back then, how you get different versions of the logo for the cover of the splash page. Because, you know, you've got the in the classic Irish snap font. But the fact is, a blockier version of the cover logo, for no particular reason, is lovely. I mean, yeah. I mean, the recap / preview of the story is not really necessary, because at that point, you know, you've been pulled in to buy the comic anyway, and you're going to be reading it, and you'll find out soon of what's going on. But it adds a little bit of extra value. And one of the things I really like about the cover, some of the splash page, which is pretty much another version of the cover, with, you know, the ice attacking the Flashes and Trickster running through the air, is the way that Carmine Infantino, he has a key line around the bottom of the image, but then it just stops halfway up the page, opening the page up against the white background as if it's, you know, infinity, I don't know, suggesting infinite story possibilities. It could go anywhere. What do you make of it?
Well, this is something I definitely wanted to ask you about, because I'm not as versed, especially on the Trickster. I didn't even, this is going to sound horrible, but I didn't even know much at all, because the Trickster wasn't on any of the media I had seen when I was younger, until I had seen him on the Justice League television show there in the early 2000s. And he was just kind of, they made him into just basically a goofball. He was never really a threat on that show, but I still like them. But how does the Trickster, what does he use to enable himself to basically walk around on air?
He just has, because I think he was originally a circus performer. And I think he invented air walking shoes, which is the, is the usual deal whereby, well, you've invented something or you've got access to something like that, patent it, sell it. But I mean, having a quick look online here, it says, you know, he did invent them that enabled him to walk on the air. And you wonder, you know, why is he a supervillain? But then again, he's from a circus background. He's a thrill seeker.
Mm-hmm. And I, in my younger days, I was a thrill seeker too, but then I got old. And you can't be that thrill seeker anymore.
I like the fact also that it's a civilian name, even though he's not in any way a Wild West connected villain. He's called James Jesse.
That's fantastic. I do like this quite a bit. You know, you have Captain Cold there blasting with his cold gun. And there's like these, they almost look like lightning bolts, but these jagged, you know, edges of these like spear-like pieces of ice going at Barry and Jay. And like you said, there's our buddy the Trickster just walking on air. And Captain Cold says, "Now that we're working as a team, Trickster, you can see how easily we can beat even two Flashes." And Trickster says, "I have to hand it to you, Captain Cold. You're a cool customer, all right." I love it.
What do you make actually before above that in the where we have the preview scene setting panels with all those words? What do you make of the little illustrations we have? We have Jay Garrick's hat floating there. We have Barry Allen's mask, those two Earths, and then we have very very strange little flat versions of the hero's hands shaking hands.
Do you like? Yeah. That's really weird. I was like, it looks more like Plastic Man than it does the Flashes.
Yeah, I mean, again, those. I mean, I've even been reading. I know you've been reading the old Barry Allen stories, and you'll know it's just a classic Carmine Infantino element to just have, you know, have the little hands pointing off caption boxes and things like that. Bit of extra value he gave us.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. So yeah, really, really cool splash page. We both agree. So all right, well, why don't we jump into the story here? So I'll just read a quick little synopsis here. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's like a half a mile long. So it'll just kind of get us going in the direction we need to go, and then we'll jump in with the issue. How does that sound?
Get in there, you mate. Get in there.
In an alternate universe that is home to Jay Garrick, aka The Flash, a meteor collides with the sun, causing a radioactive burst that threatens to wipe out all life on that Earth, which, of course, we know is Earth 2, right? The news spreads fast, and it prompts Jay to consider if he should try and save his world as Jay Garrick, radiation expert, or as The Flash. When contemplating on getting the help of Barry Allen, the Flash of the neighboring universe, Jay begins to reminisce with his wife, Joan, about his adventures with the Justice Society of America. Later the next day, Jay learns of a special metal found in a meteor that crashed in the Arizona desert that can absorb the radiation. However, when Jay arrives on the scene, he finds that the meteor has disappeared. He deduces that a similar meteor may have somehow existed in a parallel world, existing next to their own. Going into action as a Flash, Jay uses his super speed to change his vibrational attunement so he appears on that other world, which obviously we know is Earth 1. So, all right, that's going to kind of get us going where we need to go here, right? So why don't we jump in on this one? So I love, this is something I do like too, again, about comics, especially from the Silver Age, where they show, you know, the heroes just in their homes, in their civilian identities. And, you know, we see Jay and Joan, you know, reading the newspaper at the kitchen table, talking about what's going on here. And I really do like that about this comic and, of course, most Silver Age comics. What do you think?
Oh, I'm very, very into it. I mean, that first image of Joan Garrick, you know, standing behind Jay's paper before we actually see Jay. Yes, it's they're in a bad situation, but the way Carmine's dressed here, this sort of high-collared blouse, is looking very, very stern, like she's stepped out from a Bette Davis film or something like that. It's just brilliant because, you know, she's supposed to be, well, about 20 years older than Barry's girlfriend, Iris West, and she's, you know, they're married now and they're aged. And it's a wonderful, wonderful scene to anyway. I love the whole page, the fact that you've got these three panels of the comet going towards the sun, the scientists looking at the comet exploding into the sun. And all those words, and the fact it's so specific, giving you the date, April 1st, 1962. They obviously were not thinking that people would be reading these comics in, you know, 5, 10, 60 years later.
Mm-hmm. And I don't love too that page, how it's just one panel and, you know, one little text box, and it basically tells you how Jay Garrick became the Flash of his world. It's great.
Yep, that's all you need. I mean, Carmine's dressed a little more formally than in the original, because I think he was, you know, busy being the slackest student sitting in his lab. But it's great. I mean, look at those little green hard water fumes. You can see they would give you Flash powers, no bother.
Absolutely. I wish I could just, you know, inhale them right off the panel. And, you know, you get right into them, you know, having this conversation about how they're going to, you know, or how Jay especially is going to try to, you know, figure this out to, you know, help all mankind, because it's one of these, you know, world events where it's, you know, if he doesn't figure it out, it's pretty much the end of the world here. But I will say this, and I've read some other Flash comics, you know, earlier ones than these two, but the way Carmine draws Jay Garrick, I kind of feel like, man, he is a dead ringer, or I guess you could say probably Reed Richards ends up being one for Jay Garrick, the way he's drawn here. It screams that to me, as if, you know, those two guys, him and Kirby, maybe, I don't know, maybe Infantino had been drawing The Flash for a few years like this, maybe. But, man, he really looks like they were kind of going off on each other here, you know, riffing on each other with the way he looks with those two characters.
Oh, certainly. Like, they could be, you know, otherworldly twins. It's a wonder nobody ever did that in one of the crossovers. But, I mean, yes, when I was a kid and I saw the likes of Jay Garrick and Reed Richards, I was wanting to grow up to have the grey side hair, the grey temples. But sadly, the hair disappeared before that could happen. They look so cool. And I just, one of the things I always like about this scene is Gardner Fox is working so hard to ground this comic in real life science. I mean, it's a comic about super speedsters, men flying through the air on magic shoes, ice guns. But he's putting in all this real world science about this, these things called, you know, units of radioactivity called roentgens, and just going on at great length to tell us about them. And I mean, for you, as a kid, do you think that would have been too much science or just enough?
You know, I was never into science much when I was a little kid. I did enjoy it. It was one of the few things I did enjoy in high school, but I didn't enjoy it a whole lot when I was a kid. So it probably would have been like, eh, like if I saw him getting into a lot of science speak, I probably would have skipped ahead a few panels to where I saw some action.
Yeah, I would have tried to memorize it because I think this could be useful.
And I thought Gardner Fox was just pulling shenanigans here, but those things are actually legit. There's like a scientist.
A bit archaic in terms of descriptions these days, but they were used as units of measurement, the roentgens, I can't even say it. And the thing is, if you don't like the science, again, you've got the art to look at. You can study Jay's coffee nearly falling out of the cup distractedly and Joan holding her toast gently. Lovely stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. And then, like I said in the synopsis, he kind of, thinks to himself, should I just be, investigate this as Jay Garrick, or should I become the Flash because I can work faster? That is a great panel where, he's has his arm around Joan and they're looking in a closet at his uniform there. I really like that panel.
It is brilliant, although it looks like Joan's going to get married.
Yeah, that's quite a dress. She's going like a ballroom gown on just to eat breakfast.
Absolutely, and Jay looks super natty with his braces. Very, very nice look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. And again, just the regular, everyday, kind of more mundane things that, obviously Fox a little bit and mostly Infantino and Joe Giella putting in here. The panel where, she's kind of saying to him like, oh, poor Jay, you're having a conundrum here. And she has her fingers in his hair, like tussling his hair. I love that.
Oh, that's gorgeous, Billy. That's the kind of home life I want a superhero to have.
Yeah, it's great. So, he then starts reminiscing about his time with the Justice Society of America. And I did want to know, I can't remember what the actual last story was of, I'm assuming, the Golden Age or of the JSA, because he says, specifically, this is the last, adventure we were on. And I thought, I wonder if this really was. And I feel like, Gardner Fox, he was no slouch. Maybe, I guess it probably was, but it says there's an editor's note. On Jay's Earth, the Justice Society of America was a group of superheroes who band together to fight crime and injustice. Its counterpart on our Earth is the Justice League of America. And he starts thinking back to their last adventure here. And I love this too. This is a really good sequence of panels here where he thinks about all his friends on the JSA, right?
Yeah. No, it's all legit, Billy. I mean, when he's, it's from the final JSA issue of All-Star Comics, 56 or 57, whichever it was. And it was called The Mystery of the Vanishing Detectives. I read it a few years ago, and it's good fun. I was knocked out to see that there was an Earth 2 version of the key. I hadn't realized that. And that it's really, really fun to get this recap of the story. But it's also quite strange. I mean, is it page filling to have so much of the story in there, or was editor Julie Schwartz perhaps trying to build up some interest in the readers to get them demanding the return of the JSA? Because at this point, this is about a year before, I think, JLA 21-22 Crisis on Infinite Earths, before they did officially come out of retirement. So what? I mean, why do you think these sequences in here?
Oh yeah, I definitely think you're onto something there. I think it definitely is an editor saying, hey, I'm going to throw this out there just to gauge interest. And if a lot of people, write in and say, wow, that JSA, we'd love for them to come back, et cetera, et cetera. Then you're like, okay, we can either start another JSA comic up again, or at least have more appearances of them. And if it's a sales booster, the editors and executive types were all about the sales. So they were looking to make money. And if they saw it was a boost, they were like, yep, let's do it.
Yeah, and it's because you get perfect little introductions to, several of the members. And I adore the extra work that Carmine Infantino is putting in, because you could just have Jay go straight into the flashback, but you have a caption at the top of every panel on one of the pages of Jay's head and Joan's head. And they're like, doing little reaction shots to what he's telling her. It's such gorgeous work.
Yeah, the only thing I thought like that kind of seemed a little weird to me. And I don't know much about Golden Age Black Canary, but everybody's using powers and this and that to fight these villains. And it looks like she's throwing rocks at guys.
Context of the story, but if they're showing her throwing rocks, she threw rocks because she's, I mean, yes, yeah, she, I wouldn't say she didn't have the power then, but as it turned out, she never had the solid screen in this version of Black Canary. Mm-hmm. So she had her wits. I think there was one story where she had a cloud of canaries descend down to peck people. Or oh, no, they carried her to earth from a falling building or something like that. But no, basically, you're a kung fu fighter, jiu-jitsu and judo and things like that. So if there's rocks there, hurl those rocks.
And I do love that panel on page 6 there where it shows, like you said, that version of the key. He looks basically just like a gangster, but his head looks like, you know, a lock, and he's using a key that's like a gun, and he's shooting it at Wonder Woman. That panel's fantastic.
Hey, you've got to get into your theme, haven't you?
Yeah, lean into it. That's what I say. But what about that panel at the bottom left here? So this panel really struck me where he's kind of giving her a peck on the cheek and saying he's heading out. But I really looked at this and thought, you know, that panel, Joan there really reminds me of someone. So I thought to myself for a few minutes and I thought, you know who she reminds me of is the wife on the television show Father Knows Best. Have you ever seen that show?
I haven't, no. Who is that? Someone like Irene Dunne or someone? I don't know.
The lady's name is Jane Wyatt that played that part on that show. And then when I did kind of look into her, I thought, oh, yeah, she was also Mr. Spock's mother on the television show, the 1966 Star Trek television show. But she used to kind of dress like that and wear her hair like that on the television show. When you look her up and then especially different images of her, you can definitely see some pictures that are pretty similar to that. So I thought, oh, I wonder if that's what Carmine was using for some reference.
Oh, it could well have been, yeah, because it ran until, 54 to 1960, it says here. So that would make some kind of sense. I mean, she's certainly elegant. I mean, if you read those early Jay Garrick stories, you know, Joan was a bit of a firecracker slash bitch, so she's really calmed down over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just that just really struck me there. I'm like, wait a minute, that looks like somebody I recognize. So I thought, oh, I wonder if he used that as reference. But then we see Jay. He's in his Keystone City laboratory, and they're trying to figure out, you know, why this certain rock meteor piece absorbs radiation, and they figured out that, you know, it does indeed do it. So if we can just get to the where there's a huge piece of this out in Arizona somewhere, and just somehow, you know, manufacture it to stop this radiation that's coming to Earth and going to kill everyone, we'll be in good shape. But then he shows up out in the desert and it's gone. And I thought, how are they going to get out of this? Like, how are they going to explain where that went? And where they explain eventually at the very end where it went is interesting. But obviously he thinks to himself, hey, you know, there's a parallel Earth. I know there is. There's an Earth One. Maybe they have had a meteor crash, since a lot of similar events happen on that Earth as well, right?
It makes sense. You know, I was surprised actually to see him so open with the fact that there is another Earth, but then again, I suppose he's got nothing to lose, especially if the world's going to end if he doesn't get to Earth once, so you might as well tell them about it. In fact, did they use the phrase Earth One at this point? Is it just an other Earth all the way through? Alternate Earths, yeah. That would make some kind of sense. Maybe they just didn't name it Earth One until the Justice League story connects the next year.
Yeah, that's totally possible. Because, yeah, they don't ever call them Earth One and Earth Two. See, it seems like they're always just saying an alternate Earth or a different Earth, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's the second someone from the JLA said, we're Earth One, someone from Earth Two should have just punched them. It's like... We're older.
So, yeah, he goes to the spot and twirls around and heads to Earth One. And we go into Chapter Two here where it goes right to Barry. And he's in his usual hot water because he's late for a date with Iris. And that's a running theme in the Flash comics there a lot. But he has his little ring there, which this looks fantastic. He's pushing the little button and his costume's flying out of the ring. What do you think of that panel?
Oh, it's excellent. I mean, the way the costume comes out of the ring, I do miss that, because it always looked like it was like a living thing that was going to possess Barry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got a little confused here, but there was a little box to tell me what was going on. I'm like, wait a minute. He's getting into his Flash costume to go with visit with Iris. I'm like, she doesn't know he's the Flash, but it's just they're going to a costume party, right?
They are. And the theme is headline makers. So he's going as the Flash, who's a superhero who makes a headline. And she seems to be going as a swimwear model.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I thought, why doesn't she have like a real costume on? She's basically in like a swimsuit with a sash around her like you would see at one of those. What are those called when they those pageants?
Yes.
I thought that was quite funny.
It's stunning, and there's a bit of a contrast with Joan there. Joan with her bridal gown to breakfast, and Iris with her swimsuit outfit ready to go to a party. And it's just quite amazing that you have that on panel, because it's just so sexy for the kids.
Yeah, I thought it was a little wild too. And then I love what Barry says when she says, you know, Barry, in your costume for the headline makers ball, you look almost like the Flash. Too bad you aren't as fast as he is. And I love his response. What does he say?
That's a pretty keen outfit you have yourself, Iris. He looks sounds uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And he does remark to himself in a thought bubble that he changes his voice a little bit when he's in costume, just to, you know, throw people off the scent too.
I'm surprised, actually, yeah, because it hadn't actually occurred to me that he would have used a different voice, but I suppose that would make some kind of sense. I hate this one thing of Batman talking in a growling voice and things like that. It's like, for me, it's like there should be so few people who know both Batman and Bruce Wayne that it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. He'd only have to change his voice if he was talking around someone that knew both of those people, not everybody.
Absolutely.
Well, they're at the ball here, and the money's flowing in because it's like a charity event, and they're saying they want to hopefully get up to $100,000. And I love where there's a thin panel, and it shows Barry and Iris, or I'm sorry, yeah, walking around, and they're looking at everybody, and Barry's thinking, people masquerading as such headline makers as Mirror Master, Trickster, Captain Cold, the Top. Whew, if I didn't know those were villains, were really in jail, I'd be suspicious. And I meant to say, like, they have everybody in color except for the background characters, but he mentioned the Top, and he's not colored in. I think he's the guy in the mask straight back between the Trickster and Mirror Master, right?
That's the one, yeah.
I wonder why they didn't color him in.
I think it's just different layers, different planes of the artwork, you know? Just in the people at the front get to pop. Although, again, Barry Allen is on the same level as the Trickster. So, yeah.
And then we see that Captain Cold here actually is really the Captain Cold, and he's here to steal the loot and, you know, uses his freeze gun here. But just as he's about to grab the loot, I love how there's like this, like you said, like a fishing pole comes in with a hook on the end of it and grabs the case full of money away from him. And I love sometimes when comics will have like, you know, villain against villain action. And we get that right here, which is kind of hilarious. I love it.
But it is, because I think they hadn't met before this point. And we're quite a way off the formation of the Rogues as a casual team against the Flash. So it's quite fun just to see them having a little bit of rivalry. What I really like, though, is the fact that, you know, Captain Cold sees James Jesse and he goes, the Trickster. And he says, exactly, I made my escape from prison just this afternoon to get this. You don't think I'd let you beat me to it, Captain Cold? And just the idea that, you know, they can get out of prison anytime. Then what do you think? Well, why are they in there in the first place?
Right? I say send them all to the Phantom Zone and you won't have this problem.
That's a good idea.
But Captain Cold's ready to blast the Trickster. And of course, the Trickster, some of his things are just hilarious and ludicrous. And he is going to shoot him, but he says, the trick is for you to fire it, and you can't do that with a pellet blocking the barrel. Ha ha. And he has like a pea shooter and shoots the little pellet, magnetic pellet, into the gun of Captain Cold here. I love that.
magnetic. Yeah, because I'd forgotten that. I was thinking, you know, he's got Deadshot level skills here, bullseye type to get it into the gun.
Yeah,
make it a little bit easier for him.
I do like too, though, that panel where he's getting the little, you know, pea shooter or blowgun, as they call it. There is some really great detail in that small panel on the Trickster, his hair, his arm, the, you know, his shirt. What do you think there?
That's brilliant. I mean, I was just noticing in that panel that, you know, the Trickster has actually got, you know, got little buttons on his, on the cuffs of his shirt, which is, you know, something you really don't need to draw, but Carmine has drawn it. And he's just such a master draftsman. He obviously enjoys drawing clothes. I think that's maybe one of the reasons why the writers put so much civilian stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really, you know, just, again, it's a small panel, but when I see that panel, I'm just like, wow, there's a lot of detail on that little panel there. So it just stood out to me. And I do like then how Jay, he showed up, I guess, you know, and he does say that, I guess he went straight to Barry's apartment or house. And he says, Barry Allen's landlady told me he was coming to this costume ball and that I'd find him. But I didn't expect to find Crooks as well. So he goes running right after the two of them. And of course, they're just like, who's this? Who in the world is that? Captain Cold says. And Trickster, never saw anyone like him.
Yeah, never saw anyone like him. So it's a super speedster in red running at him with a lightning bolt in his chest. I've never seen anyone like him.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. They're, you know, he doesn't have a mask on concealing his face and the helmet's different. But like you said, the theme's kind of close there. So really, you never seen anyone like that before?
Pretty much. And I never even knew, Billy, that Barry Allen, I don't remember ever seeing a landlady. So maybe it was the Earth One version of Olga Star Squadron.
Maybe. We had a lot of fun with her. We liked Olga quite a bit, didn't we?
Best. Bring her back.
Yeah. So Jay starts to do like a whirlwind and tries to grab and pull the Trickster out of the air. And he basically does. And as he's going over to kind of, you know, grab the money and take care of the Trickster, Captain Cold sees his opening here to use his cold gun and freeze the ground. And that's a frozen ground is not a good spot for a speedster to be in, is it?
Not really. I mean, Jay Garrick would have fought the icicle a few times at this point. So maybe he has special grips. But if he has, they've worn out because he slips sliding along, certainly on that panel. I love that the fact that you got Captain Cold saying, if I didn't know better, I'd think you were the Flash himself. You're as fast as he is. But that costume is from Squaresville. I mean, is it that different from Earth One superhero costumes?
Yeah, I don't know with somebody like the Trickster in your midst, you should say anybody's costume looks like Squaresville.
Excellent point, sir.
But fantastic. And the Trickster says, thanks, Captain Cold. I appreciate you saving me from that other Flash. If I weren't determined to keep all this money, I'd share it with you. And he's grabbing for it, but he picks it up and runs. And it's like a kind of a Keystone Cops area. You know, you got Captain Cold running after him. Hey, come back here. And he goes, sorry, I've got places to go and things to do. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that does look painful where Jay bashes into the wall. I mean, it must be such a bash. It's actually got his helmet falling off his head. I mean, the man runs at thousands of miles an hour and the Velcro or whatever in his helmet doesn't have it moving an inch. And here it is, a little bash on the wall. He's going, whoop, doomed. I also like the way throughout the story, it says if Gardner Fox doesn't trust the readers to have grasped the concept that, you know, there's two Flashes, one's called Jay, one's called Barry, because constantly they're getting called the other Flash, or Jay hyphen Flash, Barry hyphen Flash, or Dash Flash, which sounds good. It's like, yeah, you can tell from concept they're both the Flash. One's Jay's, one's Barry.
Yeah, I think the visuals are different enough that even a kid would be able to figure it out. I don't know that we needed to go down that road, right?
Yeah. It's funny. Mm. You know, obviously, we've noticed how much detail Carmine puts into the panels, but pretty much almost every page, I think, has one silhouette-y type panel in there, which saves a bit of time. And he does, I wouldn't say skimp on the background. He doesn't do unnecessary backgrounds. So I think that's give them the time to put the detail in where it's necessary.
Yeah, a lot of times the backgrounds are just monochromatic and that's it. That's all you get. There's not much, you know, going on there. But I mean, he'll throw one in every once in a while, like on that page 12 there where Barry and Iris are talking and saying, hey, it's almost midnight. And, you know, I guess that's, they're going to turn into pumpkins or that's the end of the show. And you get some people in the background there. And Barry says, I'll have a look around, Iris. I'll hurry back. She goes, at least before they play the last number, Barry, you know how slow you are.
I need you to explain that panel to me. What's that in the corner of the panel? It looks like a blue hand carrying a cup. Is it a Muppet or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's drinking there, that guy. That's a weird-looking cup, man.
Yeah, I wonder whether someone put out a couple of donations or something like that. But anyway, if anybody has access to the comic, wants to look at page 12, panel 3, do explain it to us.
Yeah, I mean, and this I forgot to mention, but yeah, this is on the app. There's a lot of these early flashes on the app, so definitely check them out. But yeah, yeah, not sure what kind of it's just it looks it almost looks like a tin cup, but there's some kind of got some edging around the top of it. It looks really weird.
Yeah, obviously we need the ghost of Carmine Infantino to explain all.
Maybe that's who that is in the picture.
I think I've got it. In front of, pardon me, in front of Barry and Iris, there's a ornate brass type looks like a fountain. On the edge, the same type of cup, which is coloured. So maybe it's like cups are going into a drinking fountain or a punch bowl, an ornate punch bowl.
Could be. Yeah, they're at a pretty fancy party here, so that's a good possibility. And then Barry does find the police tellers frozen solid, the charity money gone. So he realizes something's afoot here, which where was all that going on with the fight between, you know, Jay and Captain Cold and the trickster and all the shenanigans? And he was not even, you know, seeing or hearing anything. I was like, man, that must have been a big room.
I was talks a lot.
That's true. But he goes
music going on. I think the Jay fight's out in the corridor.
Yeah, he goes running and then I go, huh, am I seeing things? Jay Garrick, I mean, The Flash. He doesn't even want to say his secret identity on another Earth.
He's a professional, really.
And Jay's holding his head and I like the lines drawn around his head like he's half loopy. And he says, whew, I just had a run-in with a couple of crooks. They escaped me, but they couldn't have gone far. Let's go after them. And there's one of them now. And he goes, Barry, the trickster. And he's walking on air and Captain Cold fires his gun at him and hits him and knocks him down and grabs the money. But it's like, uh-oh, look out. You know, here come the two Flashes after us. But he freezes Barry right in his spot pretty quick. And before Jay can even get to him, we have the fishing pole routine again here, right?
It's a very strong fishing pole. That's all I'll say. I mean, you think you've got a speed on the end of a fishing pole. You're still managing to run through the air. Pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure what that could be made out of, but yeah, it's able to hoist Barry up in, or I'm sorry, Jay up into the air. And then while he's doing that, Captain Cold gives him a blast too and freezes him. And then all of a sudden, the trickster has a thought here. He's like, or he exclaims, you know, Captain Cold, we make a pretty good team. Captain Cold says, not bad, trickster. We stop both Flashes. If you'll pardon the pun, Cold. And, Trickster says, you deserve half this money. I have a feeling that the two of us can make more loot than either one ever could. And Captain Cold says, good idea. We'll work together from now on, just as those two Flashes did. And they leave them frozen there. And that's when we get into chapter 3 here.
Yeah, they're a bit dense. I mean, the second they realized it was two Flashes, that should have been like, you know, right, we're going to team up. But, you know, it took them this long. But and again, actually, bottom of page 14, that panel where they're deciding to team up, it's just so clever. He's got Carbide again. He's drawn in the cityscape in the background. But he's also got Captain, with which the trickster's running against. But in the foreground, he's got Captain Cold running on a big, nicely drawn pavement with a bit of white space between them. And it's just design working for the storytelling. I think it's so clever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said earlier, I don't feel maybe I definitely feel for sure never gave Infantino enough credit, and I should do that even more, because the more I read these stories and look at them, I just think, man, he was, you know, one of the top guys in the Silver Age in all of comics.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not, I think didn't after this a few years after this he became pretty much DC's cover designer and then went on to parlay that into becoming their publisher. And it's no wonder, because he really knows how to do an eye-catching composition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then chapter 3 begins with the two Flashes frozen in ice here, but trying to figure out how to get out. And they both basically do the same thing, which I found interesting because, you know, they're both, you know, smart guys, scientist type. So it's pretty plausible.
Well, the fact that they both held their breath when they saw the ice coming towards them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they say. Then gave them a little bit of space to vibrate and get out of there. And, you know, this is when Jay then tells Barry about, you know, hey, this is why I'm really here. Like, chasing your supervillains around is a lot of fun, but this is why I'm really here. You know, my Earth is, you know, going to be destroyed within, you know, 24 hours or whatever time frame he gives them. And I like how they're sitting on a park bench talking about it.
It's fun. Actually, go back for a second to the thing about sort of holding your breath to give you a little bit of room to get out of the ice. I think it's probably the Flash version of, do you remember the way whenever Batman would get tied up, he would always explain afterwards that he'd sort of sucked himself in a bit. No, he'd expanded his belly out. So he would have a bit of give when he breathed back in again, so the ropes would be a little bit looser. And then he could get out. Yeah. I think it's that sort of thing. But yes, indeed, two Flashes on a park bench. It's such a lovely, lovely illustration. It gives so much room for all those words.
Yeah, there's a lot of words in that little panel. You have Jay saying, so I've got to get to your world's meteor crater at once. It's the only hope of saving my world. And Barry says, I'd like to give you a hand, but I better stay around here and wait for Cold and Trickster to strike again. Anyhow, good luck. I'll alert the authorities about your mission here. So,
I'm a little dismayed by Barry's sense of priorities here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the whole world could die, or two villains could rob a bank or something. Big deal.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, it's just money. All these other people are, you know, the whole planet's going to get killed. So, yeah, why don't you just say, let's just let Cold and Trickster get away for another day and I'll pick them up.
It's very strange. Oh, dear. And then we have another scene with Barry and Iris calling him a slowpoke.
Yeah, and she goes, I'm the last person left at the ball. And he goes, there was a robbery, Iris. And after all, I am a policeman, you know. And she puts her hand on her face and says, a robbery? Tell me all about it. After all, I am a reporter, you know. I like that scene.
A reporter, because all that's happened there and she's not noticed any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully she's not an investigative reporter.
None of that. We have to see the news, so I always thought it was something like, you know, what's that magazine? It's not Time Magazine, Life Magazine. Lots of big picture stories, things like that.
Yeah, she'd be better off for something like that. Definitely not anything news breaking that's like important.
Not at all, but I'm sure we'll get a story eventually.
Yeah, and I do love that panel at the bottom of page 16 there where we see Jay running. I love that, you know, running speed effect there where he's getting to the crater area.
Oh, you can't beat that effect. I mean, I remember in the 1980s when Wally West got his comic, I think it was Butch Jackson, Geis was drawing it, and I liked his work, but it was like he'd made the decision, the conscious decision, to get away from the classic speed lines. So you'd have Wally running with no speed lines behind him, and there's just no sense of speed. I mean, that's visual shorthand for speed. It just looked bizarre.
Yeah, I really love the effect that Infantino and Giella did here. That's fantastic, especially with the colors. You know what I mean? The lines themselves would be fine, but I like how it has the red and blue in the top and bottom there. That's awesome.
Yeah, I wish we knew who the colors were, but the word credits even, you know, can't even get them on the Grand Comic database things. I think it was just all done in-house, probably by whoever was in Jack Adler's production department that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always something I think too about credits from way back when they were not very good at, you know, keeping credit and keeping it written down somewhere. It kind of sucks that you can't, you know who did this great work, because again, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, because you know, a lot of, say, you know, whoever was there that day, they were all artists, craftspeople. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Jay, he decides, you know, I've got to dig this meteor out of this crater. And he starts running around at, like, you know, a million miles an hour. He does say he's shoveling while he's doing this, but I don't see any shovel in his hand. Now, he is really in a tiny little, he's a tiny part of the panel, but he says, I can dig out a lot of dirt before the first shovel full falls back to the ground. And he digs and digs and then spins around. And he's like, by running around and around the rim of the crater, I can whirl the dirt in a fast moving circle like a tornado to kind of just move it out of the way there. And he does eventually find the meteor in the crater there, right?
He does. I mean, I see no shovel. I see 2 pages worth of shoveling science. Again, there's so much more than you could possibly need to know, but it's like, pardon the pun, you know, the really grounding the science script. It's like, if you want to know how to dismantle a meteor after getting into the ground, this is your textbook.
Yeah, I feel like Fox specifically, in the Silver Age, maybe even into the Bronze Age a little bit, he did try to, incorporate a lot of that into stories. And I know, you know, of course, you know, especially in the Silver Age too, it's mostly kids reading these, but I almost feel like he thought, you know, he could, you know, kind of, I don't know if I want to say educate little kids, but kind of he wanted to do that. You know, he purposefully did that to kind of make the books, you know, be a little bit, or at least seem a little bit smarter. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, they are making the kids smarter. There'll be kids who read this and will have been able to come up with some of these facts in class and impress the teachers. And if parents are nagging the kids in, why are you reading comic books? They go, well, look, I'm learning stuff. And you never know when knowledge is going to come in useful.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you figure too, just the kids reading is helping them with, you know, their reading comprehension and vocabulary and all that stuff as well.
I mean, who didn't learn Invulnerable from comic books?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I learned everything from comic books. Sorry, I'm just teasing. My teachers were great. But I did learn. I feel like you do, if you read comics at a young enough age, you do, you know, it does help you with those things. And, you know, again, I know there are some people that kind of still like, oh, comics, you know, those are for kids. But it does help. It does. I mean, just like you said, just reading, you know, getting kids to read.
Absolutely. And then, you know, teaching them visual language. But one thing, Billy, that you will not learn from this comic is how to consistently spell the state of Arizona, as it appears twice across the book as Arizonia.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I love when there's little quirky things like that that pop up. That kind of always makes me chuckle a bit. But, you know, who was editing this? You know,
I mean, the reprint editor should have caught that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. But Jay eventually, he does, you know, get all the meteor out and uses he goes, just as a straw can penetrate a tree when blown by hurricane winds, just as I can vibrate through solid walls, so my hands, by moving at super speed, can slice the metal of the meteorite. I thought, yeah, but isn't that going to hurt? Like, his hands are going to be in pretty bad shape for a while.
You'd think so. It was, I mean, it's an interesting wrinkle to the power, but it's not one that's been used consistently or hardly ever, probably for the reason that you give.
Yeah, and I guess there's some airplanes taking the ingots, as he calls them, to Central City by air transport. And he goes, I'll give them an hour start, then take off myself. And we get a page where it's really cool panel here where Barry and Iris are checking out the newspaper here, right?
It's excellent. I mean, you know, Iris has, as we suspected, got the story. She's put a picture of J Flash on there with a lovely little Flash logo at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Huge background she gets. And I just, honestly, Barry and Iris just look the coolest. Barry with his bow tie and suit. And even then, actually, he hasn't got quite the buzz cut that he had later. His hair's a little longer than it became for most of the Silver Age, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, he's got his beautiful blonde hair there. It looks really, really good. But he does mention, like, yeah, I haven't seen the Trickster in Captain Cold for a while. So you know what that means. Here they come. But him and Jay concoct a little bit of a plan here to kind of lure them out and capture them, which I thought was interesting. I feel like you said earlier, kind of like, why is Barry so focused on the two of them? All they did is rob, you know, $100,000 from a charity event, which, you know, it's not that's not a big deal. But, you know, isn't Jay and, you know, what's going on Earth 2 really what's important here? Why concoct a plan to bring them out of hiding? Other than for, you know, the pleasure of the readers here, right?
Oh, it's certainly bonkers, Billy. And surely most of the kids, you know, they'll be 8, 10-year-olds, something like that. Most of the kids will be thinking the same thing, because kids aren't daft. You think, well, surely saving the world's a little more important.
Mm-hmm. And there's the newspaper at the bottom again. Arizona meteorite contains diamond fortune.
Of the world, $1 billion in jewels, has no use for them, he says. It's like, well, and also not a thief.
That's fantastic. So, of course, you know, Captain Cold and the Trickster are like, oh, you know, there's, you know, millions of dollars in diamonds. We're going to go steal them. And they do, of course, show up to grab the diamonds. But we realize it's, again, it was all a sham here by Barry and Jay to get them to come out of hiding. They weren't really diamonds, were they?
Really weird. What do you think of this machine that Jay concocts, the vibrator transporter?
Yeah, that's wild. It almost looks like a piece of equipment here. It's all solid green, but it looks like it's made out of like steel or something. And it's got like a, on one end, it looks like it's just like a landing pad for, you know, one of those new things. What are they called? Those things they go up in the air and they're watching everything, a drone. Yeah. And then there's like an arm, and it's just wonky looking.
Yeah, or just something that breakfast cereal would roll off onto. It's like not exactly Kirby tech.
No, but it's going to transport this stuff to Earth too, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jay, all-purpose scientist.
Yeah. So, but how about this? The Trickster and Captain Cold, when they show up to steal the you know, air quotes, diamonds here. Barry says, they fell for our publicity campaign about those fake diamonds. And Jay says, now let's bring the Trickster down as we planned. And the two of them do bring him down by whirling around. And then Captain Cold, though, he's got his gun and he's, you know, slowing them down. And we see an image that's, you know, sort of like the splash page there, right?
We do. It looks pretty darn good again. Really, really impressive. And then I just love the fact that they're using, you know, karate chops to slash through the ice bits.
Yeah, but the quick-thinking flashes are not at a loss. Their hands move super swiftly. It shows them chopping them up and then, again, running after them. And by this point, the Trickster is back at it. He's ducking into a cloud, but when he comes out the other side, he'll find mighty rough going. So Jay goes after him, and Jay does eventually, you know, kind of bring him down out of the air and kind of grabs him, but then he disappears. And I thought, wait a minute, what is going on here? I had no clue what was happening here. And we do find out from Barry what was going on, and we do get, you know, an editor's note saying you can see what's going on with certain things in showcase number 8.
Yes, I'm not convinced by the idea that a cold gun can generate specific moving barrages.
Yeah, a little far-fetched, right?
Ridiculous, even for the comic. You know, just the fact that, you know, an editor's note says we've done it before doesn't mean you should do it again.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it made sense the first time either. So that's fantastic. But Barry, he's going after Captain Cold here. So he's like, oh, I will, you know, pick up this this piece of the metal, the meteorite thing, and use metal shavings like breadcrumbs so Jay can follow me.
Yeah, just, it's a bit strange. You think of all the poor little animals that have chewed on shredded metal and killed their feet while Barry's really going towards the villains. And it's a very impressive villain just going hide in a cave.
Not very Yeah, they just have a cave. The two of them are in there, and I love how Captain Cold says, another for you, another for me. They're splitting up the booty they got here. And the Trickster goes, you know, these diamonds look a little odd. I'm thinking they probably do, because as Barry says, that's because they aren't real diamonds, but glass chunks. The other Earth Flash and I doctored them to resemble real gems. And I thought, how do you doctor a piece of glass to look like a diamond? I don't know.
I don't know. Superman was forever turning coal into diamonds, so getting the shape can't be that difficult.
No. And they're both scientists, so they can figure something out, I guess, right?
Absolutely. But the thing I don't like about this whole scheme to get the bad guys is that they've given Iris, poor Iris, trusting Iris, fake news.
Yeah, so now she's probably going to get fired because of them.
Could be.
Captain Cold says, we were tricked. And Trickster, we walked into your trap, Flash, but it won't do you any good. And Cold says, I have a new attachment for my coal gun just for you, Flash. Trickster, I have a trick gadget that will amuse you too. And he's got like another pea shooter or something. And he says, save your tricks and gadgets, fellows. You won't be able to use them on me. You see, all I have to do is stop both of you is snap my fingers. Captain Cold, have you lost your senses? The Trickster, no one but no one out tricks the Trickster. And then he snaps his fingers, and all of a sudden the two of them like are blasting each other with their devices, and you're thinking, what's going on here? But Jay's here to help, right?
Absolutely, which is good, because it means we actually get to see sort of what these new gimmicks do.
Yeah, so they shoot each other. He goes, Trickster, I shot you. How? And Trickster says, and I shot you. How? And it says, then slowing down to so that he becomes visible, the other world Flash, meaning Jay, reveals his presence. And he says, it was I who grabbed your gun hands and swung you around at the signal of the Flash's snapping fingers. And Barry says, with my speed gear eyesight, I saw the other Flash run into the cave so fast you couldn't see him. He understood my snapping fingers to mean put you both out of action. And I thought, I don't know how you snapping your fingers relayed that to him, but oh well.
Yeah, I think it's just superhero instincts. You know, there's an opportunity here for other Flash to stop them. And no, you're right. You just did stink. Because a wizard did it.
Well, I like these last few panels on this page, and then the following page is the last page of the story. It shows the two of them vibrating next to each other, and Jay says, the ingots have already been vibrated into my world, Barry. And Barry says, let's see how they're being used. And I like how, you know, they both then go to Earth too. I was thinking, oh, it'll probably just end with, you know, Jay going back to his Earth, but you know, Barry goes with him, and I do like that.
It's great. I mean, they're so powerful, these guys. What couldn't they do?
Mm-hmm. And it shows a neat panel of them in silhouette there. What about that panel?
I like it. I like, you know, it's silhouette, but it's silhouette with highlights as well. And it just makes it look like a really nice science fiction type panel with the rockets going up into the air, them standing watching them, clouds there. It looks really good with nice purpley skies. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I really like that. And there's another panel inset there where it's Jay, and he says, when the epsilon radiation hit our Earth, our meteorite absorbed it. We thought it absorbed only the radiation around the crater, but it must have absorbed far more, enough actually to save all our lives. But its effectiveness lasted only 24 hours. So that's what he said that happened to the one on Earth 2, and that's why he had to go to Earth 1 to use theirs. But yeah, and then the final page, you know, the two of them are just kind of talking about everything and how things shaked out. And Barry says, you know, Jay, if everything happens in our world, eventually happens on mine. And when a similar comet crashes into our sun and epsilon radiation bathes our Earth with both meteorites destroyed, there'll be no way to save ourselves. And Jay says, I've already taken care of that, Barry. And I thought, oh, yeah, what about that? And then Barry is talking to Iris, and he says, Iris, thanks to the foresightedness of the other Earth Flash, who had a chemical analysis of the meteorite metal made, we have enough synthetic meteoric metal on hand to spray our atmosphere at once. And she says, we owe a great debt to both Flashes, Barry, because it's happening on Earth 1 then as well, right?
Absolutely. But I would have left two mysteries here. I wouldn't have bothered explaining what happened to the original meteorite. Leave that for some Earth 2 villain to be revealed to have grabbed it at some point or something. And just leave it hanging it one day, and they may have to team up again to sort this out on Earth 1 in a different way. Don't tie everything up so neatly there.
Yeah, you figure you could have got another issue or two's material out of this if you would have just left those things go, right?
Easily, yeah. Do it.
So, well, yeah, that's the end of the story here. So, yeah, what did you think of the story? You like this one? It's a good story, right?
I enjoyed it loads. I mean, I certainly got my 12 cents worth, or it might even have been 10 cents. I mean, there's just so much going on. You have engaging characters, fun villains, more science than you could ever need, but which may have come in useful. I mean, this would keep a kid going for probably about 40 minutes, something like that. And they'd read it again and again and see new things. I mean, the art's just glorious. The colours pop. I love it.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this story. And like, you know, we talked about it in the beginning a little bit too. And then at the very last panel there, I liked a lot of the more quiet scenes too. Like the scenes with the villains are great. They're fun. They're a hoot. But I do like that, you know, when it just shows them, you know, the two heroes at home, you know, with their wives and this and that. I really like that. I think it works good for the pacing of the book that you're not always on the edge of your seat. There's some moments of calm.
Absolutely. And bit by bit, Julius Schwartz, he's just expanding the scope of the stories, you know, with Earth 2 and, you know, the prospect now of the JSA coming towards Earth 1 or vice versa. It's just, I mean, I must see if I could look at one of these illegal sites and see what, find a column with a comic with the letter column and see what the readers were saying. Although one of the problems these days is these terrible sites, which you would never look at, is quite often when they have the reprints now, it's not the original comics, it's just they've nicked the reprints from the online official sources, so you don't get the letter columns and things like that, which is a bit of a shame. But I will say, when I look at these things, I'll only ever look at things that actually I have bought previously, or that there's no way you can buy a copy of anywhere, so no one's losing out.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that. But and I again, to mention, I loved the references to continuity as well. That does make me then want to go seek out those other issues and read them. And I think at least one of them is on the app, if not two of them. So that trick works. I will say that, doesn't it?
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, I've been reading the you know Showcase 8 or whatever, and I'd be wanting to read about the negative energy this reference at some point in relation to Captain Cold and this, that, and the other. Yeah, I think, you know, in those days, obviously, you know, there was no back issue market as such, but I'm sure kids could find them at yard sales and swap them with elder brothers and things like that. In fact, Barry Allen had only been around for about a year and a half or something at this point, like 1959, 1961, 1962, maybe 3 years top, so they could find things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just love the artwork too. So, you know, all the praise in the world to Carmine Infantino, Murphy Anderson with the color, and then the cover, I'm sorry, and then Joe Giella with the inks on the interior. So I really liked it quite a bit. Like I said, I've really come to appreciate Infantino, his artwork.
Oh, me too. I mean, on that final page, the top middle panel on the final page, if you go in close up, you know, you see him drawn in Barry's eyebrows in the mask, which I've never in my life seen. It looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I am expecting maybe even today I gave in and I saw that there was a hardback collection come out in the last maybe year or so of DC Legends, Carmine Infantino, or something like that. So I've given in and bought it. Another book I'll have and look at and not have time to read, really, but I'll own it, Billy. That's the main thing.
I feel you on that one. I've gotten so many books and it's like, I'm eventually going to get to that. That's in my mind, it's always a retirement thing. I'll be able to read all of these in retirement, which, yeah, we'll see.
I'm looking forward to it hugely, sir, hugely.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to do it for us. You know, this was a lot of fun. You know, thanks for joining me, Mart. I really appreciate this. I had a lot of fun.
No, thanks for having me. I'd love to know what other people thought of this issue if they've read it.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody, again, it's on the app. If it's in this a little hardcover that just came out a couple of years ago that I have, it's been reprinted a bunch of times. A lot of these Earth 1, Earth 2 stories have been. So, yeah, if you have it or have access to it somehow, yeah, definitely chime in and let us know, either, you know, on social media or, you know, email aworldonfirepodcast@gmail.com is the email address. You can email and, yeah, we'll definitely love to have a conversation about it. And you're still floating around out there on Twitter at Mart Gray, right?
At Mart Gray, yes. And I've got my blog, Too Dangerous for a Girl. Around and about. I'm on Facebook as well. If anyone wants to say hello there, you can find me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely if you have any appearances coming up soon too, always interject with those too, because I want everybody to find you out there when you're guesting, because you not too long before this recording you had guested on Checkered Past podcast, talked about a cool comic.
Oh, it was, yes, that was fun. We were talking about Jimmy Olsen. I think it was number 101, but it was just a typical late 60s Jimmy Olsen issue with two wild stories and getting to talk to Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband. It was a good time. And you've been on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic show. Everybody definitely needs to tune into that. The DC Checkerboard era stuff is absolutely fantastic. Really, really good stuff. Everybody needs to check out Checkered Past as well. But yeah, you were on that episode and I listened to it. Those guys, their show is one of the shows that literally the morning it comes out, I always listen to it right away. That'll be my first listen when there's a pops up.
those chaps, honestly, if podcasters were drawn by early 1960s Carmine Infantino, they would be the guys. They'd sitting there in their gorgeous shirts, lovely trousers, smoking pipes, being sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And they do, Dr. Bob does have a YouTube channel as well. I think it's Dr. Bob's Kitchen, where he does some cooking and stuff. And it's really good, too. Everybody should check that out. That one's a lot of fun, too.
If you're looking for it on YouTube, that's Dr. Dr. and Bob, B-O-B-B, apostrophe S, and then Kitchen, as in Kitch, so K-I-T-S-C-H-E-N. Is that right spelling? I think so.
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah. Especially around Christmas time, he does really, really good, fun videos. They're a real blast, because he'll just make something that's, you know, maybe a listener or somebody will chime in and say, why don't you make this or make that? And sometimes these things are completely absurd, but they make them and they try them and they're good sports about it. I love watching that.
Utterly inedible beef drinks and the like.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, I couldn't do it. They're better men than me. I couldn't do it. If somebody was like, try Beef Fizz, I'd be like, no, thank you. Oh, fantastic. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap everything up for this one. Again, I want to say thanks, Mart. I appreciate you being on. And, you know, we'll be back soon again with another, you know, story, you know, Flash, Green Lantern, something of that nature. With these Earth 1, Earth 2 crossovers, right?
Oh, I'd be delighted. Let's find some excuse to talk Carol Thoris.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, fantastic. So, all right, that's going to wrap things up, and we will be back in a couple of weeks' time.
Bye-bye.